Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I have been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. Today, we are speaking with Karina King. Karina is the Director of Operations at the Dakin Humane Society. Karina, I would like to welcome you to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Karina and I also, we go way back. I keep saying this on my shows, actually, so I seem to be interviewing lots of friends and family these days. But anyway, I just wanted to ask you how you got started in animal welfare as well as getting involved with helping community cats.
Well, they both happened at the same time. I was working as a veterinary technician in a private practice and seeing people bringing in baby feral kittens that they had found and asking us what they should do about all those babies that were happening. And I kept badgering the local shelter and telling them that they should do something about that. And one day the director called up and said, "We're having a meeting about doing something about those cats, and I think you should come." She had been to a conference where they talked about TNR, which was a pretty new program at that time, and talked to everybody who came to the meeting. And 3 months later, we had our first MASH-style TNR clinics, which we continued until we bought a building that was big enough for us to be able to do our own surgeries. I ran the program, and I ran it as a volunteer for the first 2 years. And then after 2 years, I decided that animal welfare was much more interesting for me than working in private practice and had a lot more opportunities for me to make differences in the lives of animals. So I told the shelter I was ready for them to hire me when they had a position open, and they did.
Looking back, all that work that went into those MASH-style clinics, if you were just starting out today and needed spay-neuter resources, how would you approach getting access to spay-neuter? Would you focus on developing a stationary clinic and sort of bypass that whole MASH style, or do you think there's still a role for a MASH style clinic?
I think it depends on your area. So some areas have a lot of human population and some areas are pretty sparse for human population. Some areas have a lot of veterinary hospitals that are interested in working with rescues and feral cats, and some places don't have a veterinary hospital within a couple hours of them. So the answer depends on where you're located and what resources you have available. I am a big fan of the Humane Alliance model stationary clinics. They get a lot of surgery done. The spay-neuter clinic that we have here at Dakin is a Humane Alliance model clinic. It's a great model that teaches you how to do high-volume, high-quality spay-neuter effectively. And if you have a human population in your area and you don't have accessible spay-neuter services, then certainly look at the Humane Alliance model clinics, because a Humane Alliance model clinic might be where you want to put your resources into.
And I believe they have a website, humanealliance.org. It's partnered or supported by the ASPCA. And Amy St. Arnaud was an earlier guest of ours. So she talked about the mentoring program with Humane Alliance Clinic and working with folks to help set up that clinic. But yeah, I agree that there's a lot of factors that go into play if you do have, you know, veterinarians that are willing to work with you at a reduced rate. And then also the MASH style clinic does involve probably, I would say, the most schlepping of any of the programs. There's just a lot of movement of parts and people and totes and a lot of coordinating of volunteers, but your costs can be quite low also in that standpoint. So when you started the MASH style clinics, did you just think that was the only option to you at that point in time?
I think it was the only option for us at that point. You know, other considerations are what kind of volunteers you have, how many volunteers you can access, and what their skill level is. So to do a MASH-style clinic, you need to have volunteer veterinarians to come to do surgery. That was one of the things that became more and more challenging for us over time. So our MASH-style clinics ran for about 7 years. And boy, it got really hard to get volunteer veterinarians to give up a weekend day and come and do surgery all day for us. over that period of time, so it limited the amount of surgery we could do. If you're in a really rural area where there's not a lot of facilities available, then a MASH style clinic might be perfect. Your needs for numbers are also lower because there's less cats where there's less people. So a MASH style clinic could be perfect for some areas. And yes, the totes, oh my gosh, they're in my basement for a lot of years and schlepping them. And I was, you know, even schlepping an autoclave with me to the clinics. And boy, those suckers are heavy. So yeah, there's a lot of schlepping, but your costs are super, super low because you're only paying really for, you know, your suture, your anesthesia, and that type of thing. And with any spay-neuter operation, just like with any other business, your main costs are staff. So you can get everybody as a volunteer. That really keeps your costs down.
And I would assume if people are in different states, they're going to need to check to make sure there's certain rules and regulations that would allow them to operate a MASH-style clinic.
Absolutely. In our clinics that we ran were always in veterinary hospitals, so there would be a local veterinary hospital who usually fielded at least one veterinarian, but occasionally not. They just let us use their space. So as a normal clinic, we would be in the veterinary hospital with one of the veterinarians who was practicing there present in the clinic. But yes, there's always different rules and regulations for different states. So check with yours. If you're having them in barns and county buildings, as is done in some places, then you may have other regulatory issues.
So I'm going to fast forward a little bit here to current day Dakin. You've been with Dakin, I don't know how many years, but quite a while now.
14 years, and yeah.
So you are dealing with different challenges year one than you are now. A lot of them revolve around the cat population being much lower now in terms of intakes into the shelter. The organization has changed quite a bit by moving into a much larger facility. So I don't know if you could just touch upon sort of the differences of the challenges that you're facing now with regards to possibly discussing a program that you have for your feral kittens, your older feral kittens.
I've been with Dakin for 14 years, and for the first part of that, we were a limited admission small organization, and there was a open admission shelter in our region. They closed 6.5 years ago, and we bought the building and reopened it as an open admission shelter. So there's been a lot of changes of what the organization does, and also huge changes in population, especially for cats during that time. We started to see those changes while we were still limited admission. When I started in sheltering, we would very commonly get healthy, friendly, fluffy kittens who were 8 weeks old, 10 weeks old, 12 weeks old. They had never seen a vet, but they had been raised indoors with a family and were healthy, and you just needed to give them their shots and put them on the adoption floor, and we don't see those anymore. The community is able to absorb all of those that it produces. Our spay-neuter clinic has done more than 70,000 spays and neuters since we opened when we moved down here to Springfield. That's a lot of surgery, and in our region, there is not overpopulation of pet cats any longer. So the numbers of animals that come in has changed, and that has changed what we're able to offer. The animals who are here, so the struggles in the adoption center right now are with cats who are 14 years old and very fearful and have house soiling issues and some kidney failure or assorted other types of issues. As Mike Kiley says, you can have a cat that bites you or a cat that pees on you or a cat that you will never see. Those are the cats that we get these days, and that is becoming more and more true as time goes by. And that allows us to offer different things to those kitties who we would not have the time or space to take care of those 14-year-old house-soiling, fearful cats in the past, and now we're able to place those successfully in homes. For the babies, we used to offer TNR only for feral cats, and if they were kittens past the age of easy socialization, so past 7 or 8 weeks, we did TNR them. Last year, we decided to experiment with those babies and put some of them up for adoption. We had previously been sending them into foster care for socialization, which worked great. If they were under 7 or 8 weeks of age, they would come back and be kind of normal kittens after they had been socialized in the foster home. But when they're 9 weeks old, 12 weeks old, 14 weeks old, we would send them out for socialization. They would be doing really well in the foster home. They would come back and go on the adoption floor, and they would immediately revert back to the behavior that we saw the first time they were here, because cats are not good at generalizing. So they would have done well with the person that they were working with in that home, put back in a strange environment, they go back to that initial behavior. So last year, our adoption center manager, Moon, decided, let's just try placing some of these kittens directly into homes instead of sending them to foster, having that not really work, and then come back and then have them now, you know, several weeks or a month older. So we placed about 30 of them last year in homes. We called them tiny spirit kittens and have little signs on them that says, you know, these are not for homes with kids. It's going to take some time for them to get used to you. They may never be normal kitties. They might always be shy. We have to be careful where we put them. If we just put them in normal cages on the adoption floor where folks can just open them up, especially in the beginning of their time here, they will ping out the door and start pinging around the room. So we've learned to put them in cages that are under the staff's eyes, and we often put little locks on them so folks can't just open the door if they're not good sign readers. But we did about 30 of them last year, and then over the winter, we called all the people who had adopted them just to check in and see how the kitties are doing, and the people all felt that their cats were normal. So they had adopted them basically as feral kittens, and the kittens had acclimated in the home, and the people said they were pretty much completely normal in the home and with the family. A lot of them, you know, are not into strangers, but the people perceive them as normal cats. So this year, that's our default position. We were able to tell all the feral trappers in our area that use our spay-neuter clinic that if you uncover feral kittens, we will take them up to 3 pounds in weight and put them up for adoption. You don't have to make an appointment or worry about us being full. We will take every kitten you uncover under 3 pounds. And it's worked out really well. We've done over 70 so far this year, probably closer to 100 of them.
Looking for a great tool to help educate your neighbors about community cats? Check out this sign available from the folks at Lumen LS, a life-saving organization from Broward County, Florida, that believes no cat should be left behind. This sturdy, bright orange sign featuring an ear-tipped cat would be great for cat colony caretakers, shelters and rescues, spay-neuter clinics, or municipalities and animal control organizations. Education about the correct ways to manage community cats is exploding in the U.S., especially in the last 5 years. This sign will help you let your community know that ear-tipped cats have been fixed and vaccinated and pose no threat to them. The community cat sign comes complete with all of the hardware you need to post it. Buying and posting the sign will help move animal welfare forward and improve outcomes for cats in your area. You can view and purchase the signs directly from our Facebook page at Lumen LS. They also have a colorful informational brochure about community cats, plus lots of other resources. Support the Community Cats Podcast and LumenLS.org by going to Lumen LS on Facebook today.
One thing with feral kittens, there's a lot of bonding that tends to go on, and it makes sense as you're talking about how, you know, if they bond with the foster home and then they just go back to the shelter to be adopted, that bond is broken, and it's like they're back at the beginning anyway. So it's, you want them to bond with the person that they're going to spend the rest of their lives with.
Well, and they might as well do it younger rather than, don't beat your head right against the wall repeating something that hasn't worked. And we used to get really frustrated with our foster homes and be like, why didn't you tame this feral kitten? All these foster kittens keep coming back and they're not tame. What is going on with our fosters? And finally we realized it's not the fosters. That's how cats work. And we should just work within the cat's normal behaviors and get them out into those homes as soon as possible rather than hanging on to them for 2 weeks or 4 weeks. So we have learned a couple things about them. We do separate them from one another as soon as they come and keep them one per cage. With a lot of the kittens, just a couple of days of being the only one in the cage, and they just kind of go normal on their own. There are others who take longer. We have toothbrushes that we will pet them with to get them used to being handled by people. But really, it doesn't seem to matter how tame or feral they are when they leave. They all are doing well in the homes, and it's just saving so many resources. The foster time that we used to spend on these little babies, we are now able to spend on other animals, so adult kitties with other significant issues instead of feral kittens that aren't really advancing in those homes. We can use those foster homes for other animals.
Now, do you think that folks are interested in adopting these kittens because you have fewer of the cute, adoptable, fluffy ones?
Absolutely. So that's a great point. This program would not have worked 6 years ago. 6 years ago, when we came to Springfield and opened as open admission, we had too many kittens coming in from the community and were shipping out adoptable, adoption age, healthy, friendly kittens to other organizations that would take them. So at that point, we wouldn't even have space to keep these guys on the adoption floor. this year we haven't had to have any sales on kittens to move them into homes because they are few and far between. We are doing the ASPCA Adoption Ambassador Program, so a lot of our foster homes that are fostering baby kittens are finding placements for them, and they don't even come back to go on the adoption floor. The population, I think, probably has to change before organizations are ready to do this, but if you have space on your adoption floor, it might be worth playing with trying it with some kittens instead of trying to tame them and then place them, just place them and see how they go. For us, it's worked really well.
Back in the days when there were a lot more kittens around Massachusetts, at the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society, oftentimes we would drive to Springfield or we would drive to another community and go and grab 30 or 40 kittens to help basically fill up our adoption center with kittens that people were looking for in order to adopt. And at this point, I'm sort of trying to think strategically here. So in our community, if at that point in time we had 3.5 or 4 month old kittens, do we go and look in other communities for those adoptables, or do we stay in our own targeted area and try and embark on a program like this? It may not be appropriate for conversation for Massachusetts, but there may be other parts of the country where there's one community is doing really well, but like the community next door is not. And so do you go and get more of those adoptable cats and kittens next door, or do we stay and focus on trying to adopt out the spirit cats instead?
I don't think there's one answer for that. I think it depends on your community and the communities around you and your organization's beliefs and capacities. For me personally, if there were areas near to me where I could just go and get healthy, friendly kittens who were not safe, so they were not in a community that has capacity to place all of them in homes, I would be going and getting those and TNRing these kittens that we're placing right now, because TNR is okay. We do that for feral cats, and I believe that it is an acceptable outcome for them. So if it's there are healthy, friendly kittens who are at risk for euthanasia nearby, personally, I would get those and continue TNRing the kittens from the feral communities. But that's a personal decision, and you need to work with what yourself and your community and your organization are comfortable with.
Right. It's definitely, in many cases for a smaller group, it's probably a board level of conversation for them in terms mm-hmm. of defining what their priorities. It's so hard when you're a small organization to keep yourself focused. I mean, it's hard enough that, you know, we now have targeted spay neuter projects, which I think is really great to help keep a group focused and have a good strategy and that kind of thing. And then the where to go next question is really a big question that's sometimes very hard to answer, and an organization really needs to take some time to think through, because you could spread yourself too thin again, and an organization spread thin is an organization that's probably not going to be around for very long.
That's true, and it's definitely a conversation that a lot of organizations in New England are having right now. Do we continue focusing on adoption when that means importing large numbers of animals from other areas of the country, or do we take the focus off adoption and focus more energy and resources on community needs that we still have in our communities? So low-income veterinary care, accessible veterinary care, whether that's, you know, financially accessible or accessible geographically to where people who need it live, or, you know, those types of programs are definitely still in need. So do we stop focusing so much of our energy on adoption and move over to other things that are the people in our community and the animals in our community need? But, you know, we can't even agree on how to define community, because one person might define community as my neighborhood and another person my city, my county, my state. My shelter's located 10 minutes from another state, the state of Connecticut. And so when we work with a lot of folks in that state who are accessing our services in our spay-neuter clinic or looking for help with rehoming animals, so my community is not just Massachusetts. 10 minutes from me is Connecticut. And we have people who have worked in my shelter and worked with me who have gone on to work in shelters in Florida and Texas and California and all over. And those are my community as well. So how do you define community? We can't even agree on that.
That's true. That's true. And there's a lot of context that goes into play with that. We're heading into a very thought-provoking conversation here. While I have you up there in the balcony, looking out sort of over at all these communities, what do you see life being like for community cats over the next 5 to 10 years?
I think that depends where you're located and how your community is doing with cats, because it varies greatly. In New England, community cats at this point are feral cats, and you could say owned indoor-outdoor cats, but we don't have friendly pet cats that aren't living as part of the family that are roaming outside in the neighborhoods for any period of time. Certainly cats can get lost or misplaced or abandoned, but you know, friendly pet cats are very quickly picked up and cared for in this area because of the lack of overpopulation. In other areas of the country, that's not true. So I would hope that community cats in the next 5 to 10 years, I would like to see us all get to the same place where everyone can feel comfortable with that, that now we're struggling with really feral cats because we've been able to help the friendly pet cats that should be living as part of a family, ideally, and that they get that opportunity in all parts of the country where it's very patchy right now where that's the case. And then we can really focus all our energy on those feral cats and get them the TNR that they need.
Do you feel that we have a shortage of trappers in the state, or why have we not been able to be as proactive with the feral cats as we may have been with the owned cats?
Well, I think owned cats automatically have a family attached to them who, in most cases, is willing to advocate for them and help them get the services that they need, and feral cats do not have that. So that's a huge difference right there. The feral cats, there are certainly people who work with them, and, you know, in my area, there was a very, very active group that was doing a lot of fantastic work for feral cats, and the person who started and ran it passed away, and the group has really struggled since then. So, you know, you see those kind of changes happening. You know, with the feral cats, you run into as well issues with the cities, where the cities will want to put on regulations, people will complain, you don't have those issues with pet cats. So basically, I think that pet cats have a family with them that's working to help them, and feral cats don't have that advantage, and there's not enough people dedicated to feral cats to meet all those needs at this point.
If you had unlimited resources, what would be your solution?
If I had unlimited resources, I would start a program where there was someone who was great with working with people and start a community resource program so that person could train other people to do trapping. Being really great with people is really important and really challenging when you are an animal welfare person. A lot of us have gotten into it because we're really focused on the animals, but if you do not have the human skills, it can be hard to get into a neighborhood and convince the neighborhood that TNR is the way to go and to get them involved in doing the work, because we can't do all the work. We need the communities to assist with that work.
I mean, one of the objectives of having this podcast is just so that people know that trap, neuter, return exists and that there are places to turn to and resources. But everybody, really, everyone should know that it is just a common reaction to spay, neuter feral cats and get them that ear tip, you know, so that everybody knows that the cat is spayed or neutered. And that's just what you do. I think that that's sort of how I was brought up in animal welfare, by being in Newburyport, and the program was already established before I got there. So it was kind of like, well, doesn't everybody do this? Isn't this just what you do? You just get them spayed or neutered, you feed them and you get them an ear tip and you monitor them and take care of them and they do their thing. I mean, that's my ideal, is that's what we have all across the country and around the world, really. We talked a little bit in the pre-show conversation a bit about the differences between, you know, return to field and targeted TNR and sort of how they interplay together and some of the challenges that maybe we in New England have had around that issue. I feel like I'm more of a targeted TNR person with a little bit of return to field on the side, and I don't know what you feel like you are.
Well, we have not been doing a huge amount of return to field because we are only returning to field if an animal comes in, a cat comes into us and we think she's a pet cat, and then it turns out that she behaviorally is not really interested in being a pet cat living in someone's home. So those are the kitties that are returning to field. In our community, we're able to place all of the friendly pet cats into homes. So, you know, we work with the trappers who are bringing the feral cats in, and sometimes they are uncovering cats who need to be rehomed, who are coming to their feeding locations. And it's a challenge to get folks to agree to put collars and tags on those cats, but we have repeatedly seen trappers who are telling us, this cat is definitely homeless, she needs help, please take her for the adoption center, I don't want to TNR her, and then it turns out to be the neighbor's cat. So getting everybody on board with, you know, the kitties who appear to be friendly pet cats, making sure that they actually need help, and that that help is rehoming, is something that is we're looking closer and closer at. With the change in population, New England for a long time has been a place where it's not okay to see dogs running around loose. If you see a dog walking down the street, people stop and help the dog because he shouldn't be doing that, which is different than other parts of the country. And what I'm seeing is that as the cat population changes as well, people are now routinely concerned about seeing any cat outside and feel like any cat that's outside needs to be rescued, which is frankly not the case. There are tons of indoor-outdoor cats, and some of them have to be because of their behavioral challenges or their history that they have had before or whatever the situation is, whether you agree with letting cats outside or not, folks are allowed to do that. And I'm seeing more and more people moving towards, I see this cat on the street, it needs to be helped. And in some cases, that's appropriate. In some cases, the cat does need help, but more and more we're seeing cats basically being snatched off of their own territory when they go out for their daily walk, and that's something that we need to talk to the community about, too.
And it's not a magical answer of the question I ask so many of my guests. If you saw a stray cat on the street, what would you do? So, Karina, what would you do?
Well, it depends. Does the cat look like, you know, she's dragging a leg and is in terrible condition? Then I would grab her and get her medical care. Does the cat look like she's fat and sassy and friendly and fine? Then I would put a collar and tag on her that says, if this is your cat, call with my phone number. And that would be one of my neighbor's cats, is what I would find out. I really recently did some research and looked at some of the mapping that's been done where folks put GPS locators on kitties and then let them go about their indoor-outdoor lifestyles. And you can go online and find these maps for England, for Australia, for Connecticut. And I had no idea that indoor-outdoor cats had such enormous territories, and they go really, really far. So if that kitty looks okay, then she probably is okay, at least in this area of the country. And I would want to make darn sure that she actually needs rehoming before I would try and grab her, again, unless she has an obvious medical problem, because I don't want to steal someone's cat.
I mean, another thing is consistency. So if you are manning a feeding station and you're feeding at that feeding station and you're seeing that cat at every time you're there and it seems displaced or it seems uncertain or whatever, you know, you can get a sense maybe. I mean, then maybe at that point in time, after doing it for a couple of weeks or longer than that, the collar idea is really the best way to go, which is a way to find out if anybody is taking care of the cats. But cats at some point in time, they do travel and might not make it back to their home for a variety of reasons. They've had to cross a highway or something. I actually knew somebody who had moved across town and their cat went across a busy highway to go back to the first house. Mm-hmm. And it took them a long, long time to find the cat back at the first house, but that cat kept going back, but it wouldn't go home. It never came home. It just always went to the first house. And so there are other things and other scenarios that I could see too, where that might prohibit the cat from getting back to its original home too. But that comes through understanding your community, getting to know. It's really a deep dive, and it's something that, you know, neighbors have to share with neighbors a little bit more than social media, maybe a little bit more than posting it on Facebook. It's more of knocking on doors and that kind of thing.
Right. And this is something that concerns me as I go on the Lost and Found local Facebook groups, and I see people now putting up pictures and they're like, I see this cat coming through my yard every day. Is it yours? Well, if my cat is coming home every day, I'm not looking on a Lost and Found Pet Facebook group, and you will never find that cat's owner, so you will never get a positive answer that way. And I see those posts going up routinely now. So to go back to what you were saying about showing up at the feeding station, if you give me a free meal every time I show up, I think you will find that I show up at your place on a really regular basis, and cats are the same way. So we have definitely seen situations where someone has been feeding a cat every day for literally 3 years and then decided to do something about this poor homeless cat that comes every day at 2 o'clock to be fed, and it turned out to be a neighbor's cat who just found out if I go over here, they're going to feed me every afternoon at 2 o'clock. So it's completely true that cats, some cats that are outside need help. Some are lost. Some are abandoned. Various things have happened to them, but we also need to be aware that some of them are actually perfectly fine and living with their family and going back there every day. So we've repeatedly had situations where people have feeding a cat, put up signs all over the neighborhood, found cat, the cat comes in, and we identify the cat through a microchip or something else, and the owners are like, well, I never looked at those signs because my cat wasn't lost, so I never actually even paid any attention to them. Their cat wasn't lost, so why would they be reading found cat signs or found cat, you know, Facebook groups? So it's, you know, it is a tricky business because some of them need help and some of them don't need help. And I think it's important for us to realize that both categories are out there and be just helping the ones who need our help.
So, Karina, if folks are interested in finding out more, especially maybe about your the Feral Kitten Program, adoption program that you have, how could people find you at Dakin?
Yeah, we would love to talk to folks who are interested in experimenting with our Feral Kitten Adoption Program or anything else that we do. You can visit our website, which is dakinhumane.org, or you can email me directly at kking@dakinhumane.org.
And Karina, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I know that some folks are in other geographic areas of the country and will listen to conversations like this and think that I am completely crazy and you are completely crazy for having this conversation with me about how we don't have overpopulation. And what I, you know, need to say to you guys is I have been there. I have seen that change flip in cat population during my time in animal welfare, and I did not think it would happen during my lifetime when I started in animal welfare. And you guys can get here too. Just keep working on the spay-neuter, keep working on what you're doing, and you will see the changes that we have seen. It will happen for you as well.
Karina, that's a great way to end the show. So I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and I hope we'll have you on in the future.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to a Community Cats podcast. I would really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes, leave a review of the show. It will help spread the word to help more community cats.